You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up today at 6 on 1A+, who still wants to go out and see a movie? Ticket sales in 2021 outpaced those from the year before, but they were still a massive 70% down from 2019. Jen White looks at what lies ahead for the movie business. That's today at 6 on 1A+. Now, what do you remember about the last time you had to perform under pressure? Maybe your heart started racing, you got butterflies in your stomach. Maybe the whole experience went so badly you decided you'd never do it again. Our next guest says not so fast. He says you can build your confidence with deliberate work and by changing the way you think. And he has lessons from the U.S. military, pro sports, and the business world to back it up. You can join in at 800-642-1234. When do you find yourself struggling with your self-confidence? What does that little voice in your head say when you're under pressure? When you make a mistake in whatever your job or hobby is, does it haunt you or do you find ways to learn from it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Nate Zinser is the director of the Performance Psychology Program at the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. His new book is titled The Confident Mind, A Battle-Tested Guide to Unshakable Performance. Nate, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be on. Thank you so much for the invite.
Before we get to what confidence is, you clear up a lot of misconceptions about what it isn't. And I think one thing I might have thought was confidence is a personality trait. You have it or you don't, and you can't do anything about it. Not true, right?
Not true in my experience. Confidence is a skill that you learn, that you develop, just the same way you might develop a good tennis backhand or a good foul shot or a good speech about a topic that you've been studying for years. It's a skill. You can build it, you can let it go, but you can build it up and get it to a point where it's very functional when you need it.
You have your own definition of confidence. Can you share it with us?
Certainly. Most definitions for confidence are rather abstract because I work in the world of, you know, functional human performance. I have developed a very functional definition, and it goes like this. Confidence is the sense of certainty that you have about a skill or an ability that allows you to perform that skill or ability pretty much without thinking about how you do it while you are doing it. It's more or less automatic, more or less second nature.
All right, a sense of certainty about my ability. Now, does that mean if I'm not really good at something already, I can't be confident in it?
Not necessarily. You can be as confident as your ability allows. And in some cases, maybe your confidence can outstretch your actual ability, which might not be a bad thing in some contexts.
You've worked with a lot of pro athletes. And something I wonder about, and I think about my own job, is, okay, you've just made a big mistake, and lots of people just saw or heard it. My gut instinct, I think a lot of people are going to be like, I got to focus on that mistake and figure out how to not do it again. You say that's exactly the opposite of what that athlete ought to do.
Well, exactly. If you focus on the memory of making a mistake, in a very subtle but powerful way, you encourage your nervous system to repeat it. That's why it's important to think about what you want, the performance that you want to have, the way you want to hit that shot, play that point, contest that point in the negotiation. You have to think about what you want, and that way you actually subtly but importantly encourage your nervous system to do it that way.
One example you gave, and I can't remember which athlete it was, there's one athlete who took their video and edited it. These are my really good plays. These are the ones where I was in the ballpark. These are my mistakes. Three separate files. That mistake file, they deleted.
They deleted, absolutely. You're referring to Hall of Fame baseball hitter Tony Gwynn,
right,
who would deliberately delete the video clips where he swung at a bad pitch because he did not want to remind himself, as he put it, looking like a fool swinging at somebody's curveball. He wanted to hang on to the memory of good hits. He also wanted to hang on to the memory of good decisions that he made at the plate, whether to go after a good pitch or whether to hold off after a bad pitch. But he did not need to hold on to the memory of the poor decisions that he made. So he essentially erase them from his memory.
Talking to Nate Zinser about his new book. It's called The Confident Mind, A Battle-Tested Guide to Unshakable Performance. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you have a question about confidence and how to build it up for our guest, or maybe an experience yourself in your career, in your athletic days, whether they're long ago or they're going on right now, was there a moment where you became more confident? How did that reflect in your performance? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Nate, suppose I came into your office and said, yeah, I want to improve my confidence. What are the first steps you take people through?
Well, the first thing I have to help people understand is that confidence is a function of how you think. Again, those misconceptions that it's a personality trait. No, confidence really comes down to how you think about yourself and how you think about the things that happen in your game or in your profession. And I have to explain that there is a very important connection between the thoughts that you have, be they memories, be they that voice in your head, be they the pictures that you create through your imagination about possible futures. All those thoughts influence your mood state, your emotional state. And that emotional state really drives bodily changes, changes in your physical nature, blood flow, muscle tension, hormone production, and those physical changes will certainly influence your execution at whatever it is that you do. So once we understand that there's a real power and there's an impact of our conscious, deliberate thoughts as we go along, now we have to be very selective and very careful about those thoughts. So I take people through exercises to manage their memories about their past, to make sure that the stories they're telling themselves about themselves with that inner voice are constructive, and so that they are also using their imagination to picture the things that they want, to picture the positive responses to life's inevitable setbacks. And with the combination of all of those thoughts put together, you can build up that sense of certainty and give yourself an opportunity to be as good as you actually are.
A lot of people might think success leads to confidence. You flip it around and talk about the ways that confidence leads to success. And you quote the ancient Chinese military strategist Sun Tzu to back up your point. Could you spell that out for us?
Certainly. Sun Tzu observed a long time ago that victorious warriors had basically made up their minds that they were going to win, and then they went into battle, where losing warriors did the exact opposite. They went into battle, and once they got in there, they just sort of started hoping to win. There's no denying that confidence can lead to success. There's no denying that success can lead to confidence. It all depends on how you think and how you process your success. If you think that your success was just a lucky fluke and that it really didn't come about due to anything that you did, well, then your success really doesn't help you going forward with your life. If, on the other hand, you are able to look at your success and say, yes, I did that, I put in the work, I made the move, I made the speech, yay me, then at that point, your success is working for you. So again, it's not what happens to you, it's how you think about what happens to you.
Another bit of practical advice. I think we've all been in a situation where we're about to do a thing, the big game, the big broadcast, the big performance, whatever, and you get the butterflies and the nerves. And you say that's not necessarily a bad thing, but we can do something better with it.
It's absolutely not a bad thing. It is just a fact of who we are as human beings. We are designed through our evolution to experience a surge of energy, the production of different hormones that elevate our blood pressure, build up our heart rate, tense up our muscles in anticipation of action and positive behavior. We are wired to do this. And sometimes that energy surge is experienced as butterflies in the stomach. The nervous system as a whole is activating and elevating, and there's a whole lot of nerves in that lining of our stomach. And those nerves are going to start firing, and that's going to create that butterfly feeling. But that doesn't necessarily indicate that something is wrong. It simply indicates that the body is elevating itself to give you the best possible chance of executing well. Unfortunately, people tend to interpret the presence of the stomach butterflies or the rapid heart rate as an indication that they're not prepared or that there's something amiss. But that's really just a matter of interpretation. You can interpret those same bodily sensations as excitement as opposed to nervousness or anxiety. You have to choose carefully in that situation.
We're talking to Nate Zinser, head of the Performance Psychology Program at the West Point Military Academy. He's with us today to talk about his new book. It's called The Confident Mind, A Battle-Tested Guide to Unshakable Performance. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are there areas of your life that you're really confident in, areas where you deal with a lot of self-doubt? How do you get ready for times when you have to perform under pressure? What questions do you have about how confidence works, how to build it, how to keep it up? That's 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Nate Zinser about his new book, The Confident Mind, A Battle-Tested Guide to Unshakable Performance. You can join in with your stories, experiences, or questions related to confidence at 800-642-1234. Did you ever have a teacher, a boss, a coach that built up your confidence? Or the opposite, one that gave you feedback in a way that made you less confident and made you do worse at your sport or job or task? 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Kevin is with us in Janesville. Kevin, hi.
Hi, thanks, Rob. Now you just gave me a second one because I'm also a teacher. And I'm also very careful how you praise students. You always praise their effort, not their result. Because that's what ultimately leads to that confidence, is that good practice. Leads me into my question for the guest is, could you address the old adage of practice makes perfect? Because I was always told it's perfect practice leads to better performance.
Interesting questions. Nate, you talk in the book about the role of practice as it relates to confidence.
Absolutely. The old saying, practice makes perfect, has some validity in the real world. I do like the listener's qualification of that statement. I mean, practice for the sake of practice doesn't necessarily produce great results, but it's practice of the right things, practice with the right intensity, practice right at the edge of your present ability. That is what really makes valuable changes. There's a vast literature on something called deliberate practice, and it really is practice not just doing the things that you already know how to do well and are comfortable doing, but practicing things that are just a little bit uncomfortable, a little bit difficult, and that's what really stretches you.
Kevin, thanks for that call. And Nate, that practice, that deliberate practice, it's part of, going back to your definition of confidence, that sense of certainty about your ability that allows you to, in the book, you say, bypass conscious thought and execute unconsciously. And I think about that. I've been playing saxophone for years. I don't think I'm going to play an A and then a C and then do it. I've been playing drums for a couple years, and I very much have to think kick hat, snare hat. Like, I have to deliberately think. That's part of the combination of confidence and practice that brings us together to where we're just doing it without thinking about it.
Absolutely. If you practice deliberately a skill, saxophone, drums, any kind of movement activity that requires coordination of joints and timing, well, you are literally creating connections between networks of nerve cells in your brain, in your spinal cord, going right out to the actual muscles that have to contract in order to produce the movements. And that wiring, so to speak, has to get a lot of practice. It has to have those messages sent back and forth many, many times. And at some particular moment, and no one knows exactly when this is going to happen, that neural transmission network really becomes efficient. And that's when the movement suddenly feels natural. And you have this aha moment. Yes, I can play that particular piece. Yes, I can make that particular throw or catch that particular kind of cast. Because now my underlying neural networks have reached a certain level of sophistication.
Thanks again for that call at 800-642-1234. Edward joins us next in Cedarburg. Edward, hi.
Hi. Yeah, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. You've kind of covered what I was going to say. It's like, you know, your guest was saying that these neural responses that happen, it's kind of like being in the zone. When, like, I sing sometimes, and when I'm performing a musical piece, and I feel really comfortable with that piece to the point where I don't really have to think about the next thing I'm going to do, then I get in the zone. And I didn't realize just how much of that is controlled by my body. I thought more of it was controlled by my mind. So he kind of just answered my question. It was really interesting.
Well, Edward, though, you gave us some really good examples there. That idea of a performer, in this case, being in the zone. Sometimes people use the phrase, you know, a flow or a flow state. Nate, how can we cultivate that? How could Edward cultivate that for his next performance?
Well, I think cultivating flow is really a matter of minimizing, dare I say, eliminating the mental habits that impede with flow in the first place. I am of the opinion, and so are many sports scientists, that we are actually designed as human beings to perform best in this somewhat unconscious, automatic, autonomic state where brain structures that are not required to sing a note or play a song or to even, let's get something much more serious, perform a heart transplant surgery. There's plenty of brain centers that are not required in that process. The brain centers that keep you wondering, am I doing this right? What could go wrong? All those little distracting voices, none of those are necessary. If we can get good at eliminating our tendencies, minimizing our tendencies to allow that voice to permeate, to take over, to hang around and hang around and hang around, well, then we find ourselves almost naturally in a zone or zone-like state. So I make it a process. I encourage people, don't try to get in the zone. Just make yourself zone-friendly or flow-friendly or flow-ready. Eliminate those mental tendencies that inhibit your automatic, natural performing capabilities.
Edward, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking to Nate Zinser about his new book, The Confident Mind, A Battle-Tested Guide to Unshakable Performance. Nate, I wanted to get your thought on training, whether it's at a workplace or a sports team, whatever it might be. I think a lot of training in America, in the U.S., is along the lines of, here are the things you're doing wrong. Stop doing those mistakes. First of all, how can that go wrong?
Well, if you overdo emphasis on problems and problems and problems, in a way you become more preoccupied with them, and it doesn't necessarily help you to improve. I mean, you can spend a lot of energy, you can put in a lot of effort, but in a way, that's like holding down the gas pedal and the brake pedal of your car at the same time. You'll make a lot of noise, you'll burn a lot of energy, but you won't necessarily get very far. The best coaches, the best trainers, are very good at identifying, okay, here's an improvement we want to make, and here's the positive step that will take us closer to it. And they communicate a sense of excitement about, if you do this, then you will be getting better, rather than, you're doing this wrong. You have to stop it. Let's change the narrative. Instead of stop doing X, we change to do Y. Because when you do Y, you're going to get closer to Z, and Z is what we want.
Now, this might strike some people as maybe touchy-feely, but there you are using it at West Point and on pro sports teams. And you say there's science that backs up that, yeah, that more positive way actually works better.
Absolutely. It does come across at times as soft science, but let's talk to the people who are commanding troops in ground combat. Let's talk to them about how they have been able to cope with the ultimately stressful human situation. And the number of cadets over the 29 years that I've been at West Point who have taken what they've learned in the process of becoming a good lacrosse player, wrestler, football player, and now they have to apply that same process of control of their thoughts so they can be in control of their emotions, so that they can execute properly. on the dangerous streets of Fallujah or in the hills of eastern Afghanistan.
Now, someone might be listening and thinking, okay, this may be all well and good for pro athletes, for, you know, top-ranked military members and athletic programs at West Point. Is this, are these confidence lessons useful for everyday normal folks?
That is the consensus that we have reached. I have been doing interviews on this book for the last couple of weeks, and everyone agrees, yes, this isn't just for people in quote-unquote high-stress or high-visibility situations. You know, every stay-at-home mom is under tremendous stress. Everybody working in an office under deadlines, that big pile of emails, that endless need to address your team's concerns and provide resources for them. We are all athletes in our own way. We are all striving for a particular prize, and that is what the word athlete really means, someone who contends for a prize. So these same skills can be beneficial to just about anybody in any walk of life or profession.
We'll leave it there. Nate, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
We've been talking to Nate Zinser. He's the director of the Performance Psychology Program at the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. He was with us today to talk about his new book, The Confident Mind, a battle-tested guide to unshakable performance. Still time for you to share your story of confidence or maybe overcoming limited confidence at some point in your professional career, school career, athletic career. Let us know over on the Ideas Network Facebook page or tweet us at Central Time WPR.